Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful, beautiful Spring Wednesday. And I'm Bhavani at IE Green, and you're listening to me on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm so glad to be here with all of you today. I have a great show lined up. Kelly Carlisle, the founder and executive director of ACTA Nonverba, will be joining me today, and I'll tell you more about her and what she does in a little while. But before I do that, I want to share with you what's going on right now in New York and some upcoming events that are exciting and what happened this past week. On Friday, I attended Sustainable Long Island's annual Getting It Done conference. And that's always a wonderful opportunity to get together with people and network with others who are trying to make a difference on Long Island in our local area. And, you know, one thing, they always ask for feedback. And one thing I said this particular time when I gave some feedback was it felt so corporate. And I guess that's partly because it was a little bit expensive to attend. But there's so many more 99%ers out there, and they were not so represented at this conference. It was certainly more of the 1%. But there were some great workshops talking about food and health and all the things that I'm interested in, as well as revamping brownfields and revitalizing areas that are in need of some revitalization. So there was a lot of networking done. And one thing that's always fun at that event is they actually managed to get all these restaurants to donate all this food, and that's really always amazing to me because it's really quite a spread, and these restaurants, you know, give beautiful food and serve it up nicely, and some of it are from restaurants that are sourcing things more sustainably, and others are, you know, more of the status quo, but either way, they're giving it in a gesture of goodwill, and that's always nice. And then Sunday, I hosted at my home, the home of IE Green, a medicinal and herbal walk with Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, and it was co-sponsored by Slow Food Huntington, our local Slow Food chapter. And it was really great because it was a group of about 20 people, and many of them I was meeting for the first time. That's always exciting to me when I get to meet new people in my area who are on a similar path. And, you know, one of the discussions we had is, you know, why stay on Long Island when it is such a difficult place to be in regards to caring about your health. And there's not a lot of things around all over and easily visible that support that kind of path. You really have to look for it a little bit more. But on Long Island, those of us that are doing it are really needed because we're really making a difference. And the more people that can come together and form a group in solidarity with each other on a path of wellness, sustainability, thinking about the planet, the environment, and our nature on this planet. You know, that we are part of this whole planet and that we are not the only beings that matter. And we need to think about the plant world and the animal world and, you know, tread a little lighter than what the human race normally treads. And so it's always wonderful when you meet others that care and want to do this kind of work. And Ellen Kamai is so knowledgeable. She actually has a show on the Progressive Radio Network as well as I do, and she's responsible for actually bringing me to the network, so I thank her so much. But her information is just endless and endless, and we found mugwort on my property. We found echinacea. We found, what else did we find? White pine bark, and how all these plants were used on a regular basis by people only one generation ago. I mean, this is not old knowledge. This is old knowledge that has been forgotten just in the last 50 years. And Ellen knows so much about medicinal plants and natural remedies. And so we're really looking forward to scheduling another event that will actually allow us to make some of these home remedies. And that will be really exciting. So it was really a good time by all. And then, of course, you always have to finish a good event with some good food. And so we shared in a potluck. And it was vegan and delicious. And everybody brought some really delicious food. And so that's always nice to bring people together and share in food. So I'm happy about that. A couple things coming up next Wednesday, following my show, my guest will be Roberta Romano, who is the producer and director of the movie The Harvest. And then after the show, we'll be driving out to Long Island together to the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington, where we will screen the movie The Harvest. And Roberta will be there to answer questions at the end of the screening, and then we'll have a little reception. So if any of you are in the area and would like to join us for that. And then on Saturday, Gary Null will also be there screening his latest movie. So those are some really great upcoming events. And every Saturday throughout the summer in Bryant Park, the Occupy Wall Street people will be leading a civil disobedience camp. And I haven't been there, although I was at the civil disobedience training in Washington last summer for the protest against the Keystone Pipeline. So I have a sense of what it will be, but that also will bring people together who care about what's going on in our world and what we can do to make the world a better place and how we can protest in a civil, peaceful way. So if you are available on Saturdays starting at noon, meet at Bryant Park for the Occupy Wall Street people. Okay, so I'd like to share with you a recipe. Every week, I cook for some private clients, and I have different events that get me in the kitchen, and it's always fun to come up with new recipes, and it's really fun to share them with you. So when I do, of course, they're posted on the PRN website, and they are also posted on my website, Bhavani at IE Green, or actually the website, iegreen.com. So feel free to check them out. I'm going to go through them now, but if you miss anything, feel free to go to either of those websites to get the recipe. So this is a roasted tempeh with vegetables and peanuts. And of course, if you have an allergy and you can't do the peanuts, just leave them out. It still will be delicious. So I start with a cake of tempeh. And you can use either just soy tempeh, or you can use three-grain tempeh if you do not have a gluten allergy. Or a garden vegetable tempeh is good as well. And I cut the tempeh into small cubes. I like tempeh when it's cooked well done so that it's really crispy. Otherwise, it tastes raw to me, and I don't think it's as appealing to most people. So cut the tempeh first down the middle and then across horizontally, so you have it in, you've cut the cake into four pieces, and then divide each of those pieces in half so that they're thinner, and then cut each of those in half and cube it. And so you have, each quarter makes eight pieces, and then you cut those into cubes. And I'm going to bake those in the oven. And one of the things with tempeh, and one of the reasons I wasn't cooking with it so often, was because I really liked it only when it was sautéed in oil. And I felt like it absorbed a lot of oil and really was, more oil than I wanted to eat in one meal. Anyway, this way, I've been doing it in the oven now, and I just put some olive oil on a cookie sheet and then toss the tempeh into the cookie sheet so that I'm covering it with oil, but very lightly, and then I bake it in a hot oven, 425 degree oven, for about 15 minutes until the whole cube is golden brown, and it's perfect. And you don't have to watch it, and it can be cooking away while you're doing the vegetables, so it really is a time saver as well. So while that's cooking, slice an onion into crescent moon shapes, cut two carrots, either into julienne strips or into small chunks, a head of broccoli into flowerettes, one bok choy, or you can use a couple of baby bok choys, and you're going to chop them into small pieces, a napa cabbage, and usually They're pretty large. It's hard to get a small enough one. So just about half of a napa cabbage, a cup's worth of snow peas. And for those you want to remove the string, just, you know, pull the little edge of the snow pea down through the front, and you'll take that firm string that is in a part of the snow pea off, and it will make eating it much more pleasurable. Then you want about an 8 ounce, either an 8 ounce package, about 8 ounces worth of shiitake mushrooms, ginger, about an inch piece, 4 cloves of garlic. Both the ginger and the garlic you can grate together either in a mini processor or just, you know, use a ginger grater for the ginger and just chop the garlic really well, or use a garlic press. You need olive oil for both for the bottom of the wok and for the cookie sheet. Tamari, about 3 tablespoons, 3 to 4, depending on your taste. A tablespoon of dark sesame oil, which is used for flavoring, so it's not sesame oil that you're going to cook with. 2 tablespoons of Aji Marin, which is sweet rice wine. 2 tablespoons of tahini, which is sesame paste. It's like peanut butter, except made with sesame seeds. 1/4 cup of water, and then 1/4 cup of peanuts for garnish, along with parsley or cilantro for garnish. And you're going to cover the bottom of the wok with some oil. And when the oil is hot, but before it smokes, you can add the onions and the carrots. And cook them for a few minutes, then add the garlic and the ginger. And continue cooking at a medium-high heat, stirring constantly for about 5 minutes. If it seems like it needs more oil, or if you'd like, you can add water instead. You can do that. Then add the broccoli and cook for a couple more minutes, then the shiitake mushrooms, then the bok choy, then the napa cabbage. And basically, you're adding the vegetables in the order of how hard they are or how long they take to cook. The idea when you're stir frying is that all the vegetables should be ready at the same time. So you always start with the root vegetables and then add the more solid vegetables before the leafy vegetables. That's usually how it goes. Then you can add the mirin and the tamari, and then add the snow peas last, and you just cook them for about a minute. Then you're going to add the sesame oil and the tahini. You can make a little spread with the tahini and the water. Make a smooth paste with that first and then add that into the wok. And when the vegetables are all cooked, depending on the tenderness that you like, turn the heat off, add the peanuts, add the parsley and the cilantro, either or both, for garnish. And then drizzle dark sesame oil over the vegetables for the flavoring, and you're good to go. It's delicious, and it cooks up really quick, so by the time the tempeh is finished, the stir fry will be finished. So you can put this together in probably 15-20 minutes. And that's one thing I really like to try to tell people. They always look at me like, you know, how do you have time to do all this? And the reality is, everything, like everything, practice, you get better at it. And cutting the vegetables is really the thing that takes most people time. And so you can, you know, cut them all at once, you know, at the beginning of the week if you don't have time to do it each day, and have them ready in a bag. That can speed up, you know, those weekday dinners if you'd like. But otherwise, you know, if you're not cooking for a lot of people, it doesn't take that long to cut the vegetables up. And you can really pull this together in 15 minutes. Quinoa, you can cook in 15 minutes. Rice noodles, sesame noodles, you can cook those in, you know, 10 minutes. So there's a lot of quick things you can do. If you want rice, a lot of times I make rice at the beginning of the, you know, on the weekend, and then I'll have rice throughout the week. And that works really well as well. So there's lots of shortcuts and ways that you can do it so that you can have the food easily available during the week. So, anyway, enjoy it. And again, if you have any questions, send me an email at bhavani@iequeen. I'd be happy to answer those for you. And now I'd like to invite on my guest, Kelly Carlisle. She's the founder and executive director of Acta Nonverba. And that is a nonprofit organization that works with youth, teenage youth, in the California, San Francisco area. And she's been doing that for a long time. Since she was 14, she's been working with these people and so with these kids, and it's just a wonderful organization. Kelly is a veteran of the United States Navy, and she's been the recipient of many awards, including the Navy and Marine Corps Achievement Medal. She's an avid gardener and a certified Alameda County Master Gardener. And she's also an active member of the California African American Farmers Association. And Miss Carlisle was a Bon Appetit Good Food Fellow in December 2011. And she's worked with and mentored preteen and teenage youth since the age of 14. She's a native of East Oakland, California. She's committed to creating positive change in her childhood neighborhood. Previously, Kelly ran a successful catering business dedicated to utilizing local and sustainable produce. She's a mother, activist, concerned citizen, and I can tell she's right up my alley. So, Kelly, are you right there?
Yes, I am. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much for inviting me to your show.
Oh, I'm so happy to have you. And we share so many interests. It's really great. I, of course, am a mother, an activist, a concerned citizen. I also had a catering business, and I also am a gardener, and I'm really committed to promoting good, healthy food for everybody. So it's a pleasure to get to know you over the radio.
You as well.
Thank you. So why don't you tell everyone first about Acta Non Verba, the youth urban farm project that you started and run.
Sure. Well, Acta Non Verba, just to give some background on the name, is Latin for deeds, not words. And we named our organization that specifically to let people know that we're about the actions, not so much the rhetoric before the action. We believe in seeing an issue, changing that issue, and moving from that point forward, as opposed to kind of meeting about things and talking it out forever and ever and ever, and things don't get done. We started in August of 2010 with the news that my childhood home of Oakland has a dropout rate of almost 40%, with the majority of those people being black and brown youth. We really all put our heads together. My board and I and my family got together and really started thinking out reasons why this is the case. Why should Oakland have double the amount of high school dropout students than the entire state of California? What could be done, and who is anybody doing anything about it? And we came up with a idea to utilize urban agriculture as a catalyst for community change, for positive community change.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that you can touch, something that you can see. You know, it really, gardening and farming is all sensory activity that just makes you feel good once you get into it. That's who we are and how we got started.
Mm-hmm. And so what's the vision of Acta Non Verba?
So we have our vision has grown from when we first started. Initially, the idea was to create a nonprofit that was operated by, or a nonprofit that created farms that were operated by K through 8 youth, kindergarten through 8th grade youth, where they would plant the crops, maintain the crops, harvest the crops, and then sell the crops, and 100% of those proceeds would go into a savings account that can only be used for educational purposes. We've grown. That is definitely our core project. That's our core vision, is to make sure that as many children in the Elmhurst district where our farm is located have those accounts and have the opportunity to work in the garden and earn those accounts. But more than that, we would like to see the entire community uplifted by this farm. We'd like to see more and more people begin to grow their own food and to realize where their food is coming from, whether it's local or not local, whether it's organic or inorganic, we want to change the perception of what health looks like. You know, if you get a, I was telling one of our, one of the family members that come over to our farm that, you know, just because you go to McDonald's and you get a Happy Meal and then get one of those little bottle salads, that doesn't make you healthy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're just taking, you know, that's one step in a long line of steps that you have to take in order to really start considering what it is that, that we're putting in our bodies.
Have you seen change amongst the community members that you're working with in their diet on a long-term basis?
No, that's a little more difficult. What I have realized is that we have to be more careful about making sure the produce that we grow is culturally appropriate. So what we have are, you know, lots of herbs, rosemary, thyme, those sort of things. And then we have lettuce and mizuna and the dino kale.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't know what to do with that. You know, when during the holidays last year, people got very upset with me because I wasn't growing collard greens. Now, collard greens, of course, are, you know, one of the superfoods or one of the best greens that you can eat. But knowing how at least my family cooks collard greens, it didn't occur to me to grow them as a health food, as a healthy food. The community is most excited about the opportunity that our project brings to the area. Not just growing your own food, which is exciting to a lot of our neighbors, but also just being a part of a community project where you can meet your neighbors and there's no obligation to do anything or to, you know, really interact on any level other than, you know, what is this? You know, how do these grow? Oh, that's where carrots come from, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's another lady that lives across the street from our farm that brought us a donation. She brought us a donation of $5 for two heads of broccoli, two small heads. And I was like, you know, this is a lot for two heads of broccoli. You know, did you want anything else? And she looked around and she's like, I don't know what to do with any of the rest of this stuff.
Uh-huh.
So she asked her what she was going to do with the two small heads of broccoli. And she said she was going to give them to her birds. Her two finches love organically grown broccoli, I guess. So one of the things that we want to do is make sure that everything we grow, we can give a quick, fast recipe for humans.
Right,
know,
right.
For us to eat.
Right. Have you done any cooking demos out at your farm?
We actually did. On May 6th, we had our Spring of Green open house. Out at the farm, and we had celebrity chef Nikki Shaw from a radio station out here, KBLX, and she's the spokesperson for NBA.com. The spokesperson chef for a celebrity for NBA.com come out and do a cooking demonstration using our greens and a bunch of our produce from the farm. It was a mixed green, braised mixed greens.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And it went over really well. Yeah.
Right. Because I've gone into some community gardens on Long Island, and I found that that was really helpful for people to see what you could do. I actually brought my grill with me to the farm and, you know, grilled fruit and grilled some vegetables and, you know, cooked up a storm, and it was really good for people to see that you could do that. And then the kale, you know, I showed them raw kale salad and, you know, and that was really helpful and everybody really enjoyed it. So, tell me more about your farm. Is the Tassafaronga, am I saying it right?
Yes.
Is that the farm?
Yes. Our farm is located in District 7 of Oakland. It's the easternmost district of the city, very close to the Oakland Coliseum. We have a quarter of an acre of land and a plot that was generously loaned to us by the city of Oakland. We have 2,250 square foot raised beds, 10 of which were built by teenagers last August, part of their summer work program. And then another 10 that were built by other community organizations and individuals within our community that, you know, really wanted to see us double our production space, just knowing how deeply our community needs it. We're actually in what the USDA calls a food desert, meaning that that there's not a lot of access to healthy, fresh, well, non-conventionally grown produce.
Mm-hmm.
So we have theme beds this year. Some of the kids got together and said, you know, I really want to see a pizza bed, you know, or one of the funnier ones was the macaroni bed. So we have a pizza bed with three different kinds of paste tomatoes and basil and bell peppers, and we have an edible flower bed. Some of our young ladies were very excited about to know that they could eat flower petals, so we planted a bed for just edible flowers.
Uh-huh.
And a salad bed with three different kinds of lettuce and six kinds of tomatoes and heirloom and regular beef, big beef. Yes.
Uh-huh. And about how much produce do you actually get out of that quarter acre? Have you ever figured that out?
You know, we estimated, so at the beginning, we did our first planting in October, and within 1 month, we were already harvesting things out of the garden. So we estimated that between October and December, we harvested about 100 pounds of produce that was all donated to the community and also to the some of the Occupy folks down at Franco Gallo Plaza.
Mm-hmm. Great. I was involved with the New York Occupy a little bit, and it was a good feeling to bring some food down there, for sure.
Yes.
So what other programs and activities do you have going on at Tassafaronga Farm?
Well, right now we are gearing up for our summer program. We're really excited about it because it's going to run for 2 months, 8 weeks. It's 3 days a week, and the kids will be able to, again, we're talking, you know, ages 5 to about 12, will be able to come in and learn how to garden. They'll learn how to plant from seed. They'll learn how to plant seedlings, pest management. We're going to keep logs of the things that we're learning so that they can take it back home. We're going to have storytellers, and also at that open house May 6th, we had a fantastic yoga instructor named Nadine Johnson, who took the kids through some poses, and they loved it.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing. So we're really going to focus on fitness and health this summer with the kids. And again, as we're doing all this, we're going to be harvesting our produce and selling it to the family members and the neighbors so that they, at the end of the program, they'll have the savings account
mm-hmm.
to get tutoring or music lessons. We're also working with a number of community-based organizations. One of them is the California Food Justice Coalition to create or to further a conversation about food justice within these areas, like East Oakland. They work on a national level and they work on policy and things, but they really like to be in the community talking to people and making sure that there's education around why these things matter to us, to people of color, to low-income people, to people that live in an underserved area.
Mm-hmm. I know you touched on the word food desert, and when we come back after our break, I'd like to talk more about that, because that's a controversial term these days. You know, I was using it all the time, and I hear it all the time, but you know, some people are feeling like it doesn't really exist, so I'd love to talk to you a little bit about that as well.
Sure.
So let's take a couple-minute break, and I'll be right back, okay? Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm here with Kelly Carlisle, the founder and executive director of Acta Non Verba. It is a nonprofit organization in Oakdale, California, that is working with preteens and teens in the area, trying to create positive change and doing it in her community. So, Kelly, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
So before we took the break, you had mentioned a food desert. And, you know, that's a term that I think many people are becoming more familiar with, being areas of, you know, mostly lower income that are underserved and have limited access to healthy food. And then there was a New York Times article, I don't know, last month, you know, that really challenged whether that term is accurate and that... you know, and that some people actually took offense to that term. What is your feeling about the food desert term?
Well,
And whether it's you consider it a reality or not?
Personally, I think that any place, any area or region whose main source of sustenance, of where you get your food, are fast food chains or, you know, liquor stores or, you know, little, those taco trucks. I think that that is what I personally consider a food desert.
Uh-huh.
If you have to go out of your way to access a fresh peach or oranges or, you know, whatever is in season, I think that that means that you live in a food desert.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if you can't walk, my parents live in Berkeley, and there's a farmer's market once a week behind their house, and they're about three blocks from a grocery store. So, you know, both of my parents being disabled, it's not a problem. They can make it there
mm-hmm.
and make it back without feeling unsafe or, you know, they didn't have to, you know, kill themselves trying to get to fresh produce.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I read another article, not the one that you were referring to, but another article that said basically the exact same thing. How can it be a food desert if you're surrounded by food? And my response was, are we still calling this food? You know,
Well, I think it also comes from, you know, education. I mean, I think people have done studies and just shown that, you know, there's the fast food around and there could still be a very good, adequate supermarket nearby and people still might be choosing the fast food and not choosing, you know, just like you said, you know, she came and got two broccolis and gave them to her birds instead of eating it, you know.
Right.
You know, what things can we do to encourage, and I think you're doing it just by having kids grow food, they're more likely to eat it.
Right.
But to really get people to make the right choices, you know, because, you know, it's unlikely that we're going to get to shut down those fast food places, right, anytime soon. So how do we get people to make a different choice and to boycott those fast food chains?
Well, you know, a couple of answers to that. One is we chose the kindergarten through eighth grade demographic specifically because, you know, they're still interested. They're still, you know, influenceable, if that's a word.
Yes. The perfect word in my book.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
as to what the right way and wrong way to do things are. The right way to do things is to be conscious of how you're living your life, you know, how you're, what kind of food you're picking up, what things you're putting into your body, what you're doing with your body, period. And the wrong way is just to say, you know, I have $3 and I can get an entire meal, you know, as opposed to I have $3 and I can eat, you know, a couple of pieces of fruit. It's about trying to make that line between I can and I can't less of a hard line. Another thing is changing the perception of who's talking about nutrition and health and food deserts and all of these, you know, buzzwords and generalities that are going around about the food movement. The people that we see as farmers here in my area are overwhelmingly, whether they're ranchers or farmers, you know, now all the commercials and grocery store commercials have, you know, this is where your food is coming from. At no time or very rarely do we see any person of color, which for some in my community means that it's not for us. Acta Non Verba is really trying to show that African Americans are farmers. We are dairy men and women. We are, you know, we're chefs, and we have a voice as a community, as a group, about what we're eating, about our numbers, about our continuing on this planet, you know, healthy.
Mm-hmm. And how does the community in general feel about the farm being in their neighborhood and in their park?
In general, we have so much support from parents and elders that are so happy to be able to send their children to a program that's about positive ideas and positive ideals. They recognize that this is a privilege, you know, to have the opportunity to farm right outside their home. There's a almost 200-unit housing complex that we have on both sides of us, to the south and to the west of us, and they don't have the ability to grow their food, you know, in a backyard. It's like townhomes or something. And so we have neighbors that come out and they watch out for the farm when nobody's there. We were vandalized a couple of weeks ago, and three of the girls that work in our farm saw the kids doing it and contacted the housing authority themselves. So, yeah, the community really, we have elders that maintain our trees, prune our trees for us and mow the lawn. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, what have been some of your biggest challenges in getting it off the ground and working on a daily basis?
I think education is definitely one of the biggest challenges. There's a lot of times when we grow something and I can't give it away, you know, with the recipe or without. I can't entice anybody to take the dino kale. That's a good example. People don't want that. They don't understand what it is. Regular curly leaf kale is fine, but the dino kale did not go over well. I think that, you know, really trying to get community engagement from some of the adolescent to young adult age youth is a challenge. You know, farmers are not black teenagers, you know, that's the idea. You know, I'm 16 years old and I'm black. I don't want to be on a farm. I don't want to farm that. I just, you know, whatever, you know, find me a real job. That's what I got last summer, was somebody wanted a real job, not mm-hmm. what we were doing.
Do you have some funding so that you have the ability to hire some of the local youth?
Last summer we did. Last summer, part of our funding came from the City of Oakland Redevelopment Agency. Of course, this year they dismantled the Redevelopment Agency. So those funds are no longer available, and we're trying to find other ways to bring on teenagers. There are a ton of teenagers in that complex, and we're trying to excite them about being interns. You know, they'll get job experience, letters of recommendation, Red Cross certified, you know, all different kinds of things, but without having cash in hand, it's not gaining the traction we'd like.
Sure. I know the Sustainable Long Island, the organization I mentioned at the beginning of the show, they started 3 youth-run farmers markets on Long Island, and they did get funding to pay these youth to actually run the farmers market. But it's not necessarily going to be sustainable, because when that funding runs out, you know, they're not going to continue doing it unless they are being paid, understandably.
Right.
You know, they want to make some money. So funding is definitely a challenge in this time, you know, in this economy. You know, I can imagine that that would be a real challenge.
It is. That's a constant challenge, is to... It almost feels like you have to say the magic words, you know. You have to say all of the buzzwords and then throw in
please. Please.
You have to have a whole spell book of words to give a funder in order for them to really understand your vision. It goes beyond just, you know, writing well or writing succinctly, but, you know, it has to really hit the heart of a funder to get that money.
Uh-huh. Now, do you have any animals? Do you have any chickens or bees? Or
we do have bees. We have
do.
Bees.
Good.
We're really excited about it. We've had 2 urban beekeeping workshops now, one taught by the Marin Bee Company and another one taught by another one of our community partners called Movement Generation. The kids are over the moon about the bees and really actually can't leave them alone. So,
isn't it amazing?
They are. They're one of our, I told the kids, you know, they're one of the most valuable things on our farm, or valuable pieces of our farm.
Mm-hmm.
Because they not only keep us pollinated, they're also fascinating to watch, you know, and fascinating to know how their lives work.
Right, so. It is. I mean, that's a community.
Mm-hmm.
And have you harvested any honey?
We haven't. We've only had the hive for a little over a month now.
Uh-huh.
So we have to wait quite a while. I'm told maybe a year before we'll have honey.
Mm-hmm. Right. So how does ACT A Non-Verber fit into the broader food justice movement? How are you integrating those two things?
Well, I think that... what we're doing is, again, really trying to reinvest people of color into the food movement, the food justice movement, the good food movement, the slow food movement,
mm-hmm.
all of the movements that are happening right now that surround what we're eating. We're trying to bring more youth and their families of color into that conversation. Again, I was listening to some of your podcast earlier, and, you know, I recognize almost all the names of the people that you mention at different conferences. Joel Salatin and
Will Allen.
Renegade Lunch Lady. Will Allen, absolutely. Will Allen. And Will Allen is amazing. You know, I mean, they're all amazing. Let me stop there. They're all amazing. But what I'm saying is Will Allen has Growing Power is one of the first organizations I ever heard about when I started this nonprofit. And I read up on him and went to the Growing Power website, and he's definitely a hero in the movement.
Absolutely.
But what I personally as an African American woman would like to see are the documentaries that feature Will Allens and feature the African American farmers and feature the black chefs and, you know, feature people and Latino as well that, you know, really show the diversity of the country and the people that really are fighting to make sure that we're represented as well. That's our goal within the movement is to say, you know, there's a whole section of people that either don't have the education, don't have the income, don't have the resources to tap into this good food movement.
Mm-hmm.
That need to come to the table. They need to be brought into the conversation because, again, it's all about being culturally relevant.
Right. You know, and in some groups, it's really cool, and people are tapping in and, you know, and really jumping on board, and it's really wonderful. So what ideas do you have to bring the youth that you're surrounded by into that movement? How do you engage them and excite them? Because yes, you said you're choosing the demographic that's younger, but you know, once they finish eighth grade and they get out there and they're out on the street and they're, you know, hanging out with the older kids, they're going to want to then model the older kids. They're going to forget about their experience at the farm. I'm just trying to think of ways that, and maybe you can tell me what ideas you are having to work with some of the teenagers in your area that, I know like Will Allen came in and did a workshop in building a hoop house. And mm-hmm. I had an intern working for me at the time who, you know, fell in love with Will Allen and his whole growing power and left and ended up in Milwaukee as an intern for him. So I lost my intern. I still don't have my hoop house that I, you know, I paid for him to go to the workshops that I could, you know, so he could come back and build me a hoop house. But, you know, I'm so happy for him that he found something, was able to connect. And I just feel like when they meet the right people, and that synchronicity thing happens, it just takes off, you know? And, right. And you're in the San Francisco area. I just think there's so many people that you could plug into to bring.
Well, yes. There's a number of people that we've been working with and we've connected with from the UC system on to, you know, the private sector that are very excited about our program, but I think our short-term goal is to make sure that our program is unforgettable and to be able to replicate it at different sites. So Tassafaronga is just the first site. You know, we want to do this exact same program throughout the city so that youth can, you know, see what the difference is without having the difference between having nature and holistic learning in your life and not having it.
Right.
I think that the way that we want to instruct the youth that are coming this summer is to make sure that they can carry that on to whatever next school they go to or whatever grade they go to next. Also, with this, the farm to cafeteria and the school gardens becoming more prevalent, I think that it's something that's definitely going to last a long time. So it won't be easy to just go from, you know, one grade to the next, from, you know, from eighth grade to ninth grade, and, you know, I've forgotten everything that was taught to me. You know, I think that it's gonna last.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any indoor space, like any options for cooking facilities or, you know, places for potlucks? I guess the weather's so good there, you can probably have those outdoors all the time.
We do have potlucks and different events outside a lot. We were doing our movie night up until, I think, mid-November last year. So, yeah, we have a beautiful space with like a, tree, redwood tree canopy that we, you know, do picnics and everything under.
Nice.
We also have access to Tassafaronga Recreation Center, which is connected to our part of the park via a ball field. So they have meeting rooms and, oh, you asked about the cooking, mm-hmm. the outdoor cooking. So part of our plan that we're permitted to do on this area is to build an outdoor kitchen right there at the farm.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
the idea is to just, you know, we're going to pick what we need, we're going to wash it off, and we're going to cook it right there within minutes of picking it. So that kids can see the difference between, you know, things that have been in cans or frozen for a long time and picking it right out of the garden that
right.
you've been maintaining.
Right.
But the center does have a kitchen, and they are very, very free with it. They're very willing to let us use it. Cynthia Armstrong is the director there that works for Oakland Parks and Recreation, and she's been amazing through this whole process.
Oh, that's great, because that really can make a difference, you know, especially we have that camp program. If you can bring kids into the kitchen and really get them cooking with some of this food that you're growing, and even supplement it with, you know, other foods like, you know, beans and tofu and things that you might not have there, and, you know, show them the magic that can take place in a kitchen. It's, you know, I just love cooking with the young kids. I just think it's great.
I agree. They get so excited, especially about cutting things.
Right, and using a big knife.
Exactly.
So if people want to help support your farm, how can they do that? Can they donate?
Absolutely.
Where would they go?
They would go to our website. It's www.anv, as in acta non verba, farm.org, and there's a donate button right at the top, and you'll also get to see our slideshows and videos, and just learn more about who we are and what we do, and see pictures of the kids growing and harvesting, and even building the raised beds.
Yeah, I was cruising through the website. It was great. So, well, I wish you a lot of luck this summer. Sounds like a very exciting summer, and the kids, I'm sure, are going to have a great time, and I hope you do a lot of artwork with them, too. You know, that I found really great also at our community gardens, you know, getting the kids to become more aware of observing, you know, and just looking, and then trying to draw what they see is, you know, of course, I'm sure you're planning on that, but it's always great to see what they come up with, you know, in their artwork.
Absolutely. And on our website, we have a kids blog portion. It's very small right now, but we're hoping to expand it to, you know, the kids writing down their thoughts, you know, about what they're growing and what they're seeing and what their favorite part of gardening is. So, yeah.
That's great. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us today, and I hope to come visit you sometime when I'm out that way.
Thank you so much, Bhavani. Thank you for
And you do the same if you're in New York, okay?
I absolutely will.
Wonderful. Everyone out there, have a great, great rest of the week, and I'll see you next Wednesday. Have a good one.